Vinny, what's going on, my friend? I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure. Yeah. Enjoy
What's
doing it.
cooler, being in on your first baseball card, a video game, or in your case, a bobblehead? What's cooler?
Oh, I gotta say baseball card, to be honest. Just because I grew up collecting cards and your heroes were on the cards, and all of a sudden you see yourself on one, and it's a little surreal. It's actually, you don't feel real, I never felt like I was worthy of that kind of honor. It's an honor, but I guess it's cool also to be on a video game as well. Of course, you make yourself 99s of everything and you hit 60 homers a year, so it's steal 80 bags. But yeah, being on a baseball card is pretty cool.
How much is the most expensive Vinny Rotino card on eBay right now? Do you have any idea?
I have no idea. I'm guessing like south of 6 cents.
$40.
No
Yeah,
shot.
I just looked at it. There's like some refractor card that's $40 on. I just looked.
Oh, well, I mean, you could set the prices at anything you want. So, I mean, I don't know if that person's going to get $40, but that's funny.
Wisconsin boy through and through. What's the most iconic Wisconsin food? Am I being a New York tourist by saying cheese curds or beer cheese soup? Is it brats? What's the most iconic Wisconsin food?
It's got to be cheese curds. I mean, brat with sauerkraut, I mean, rings a bell too, but I mean, cheese curds for sure. If you go to Culver's and grab you some cheese curds and dip them in ranch, then you're living the Wisconsin life for sure.
Am I saying it correctly? Racine, is that where you grew up?
I say Racine. A lot of people from Racine say Racine, but it's a lot of people around the state say Racine, either one. Yeah, grew up there.
Obviously, you stud in baseball. Do you play any other sports?
Yeah, I grew up playing soccer, and I grew up playing basketball. I played soccer all the way through high school. I gave up basketball in one once I got to high school, so I could kind of focus a little bit more on baseball and train in the off season. Also played pond hockey. I don't
Oh,
know if you consider
okay.
that a sport for sure. Yeah, but yeah, I kind of played it all growing up.
Are you a Packers and Bucks fan also?
I'm more of a Packer, diehard Packer fan. It's funny because I talk about it all the time, how I kind of understand a very nuanced and in-depth a little different aspects of the game of baseball. And I kind of it's my job to really know that and study it and kind of see myself, and hopefully other people see me as kind of like an expert, a voice in the game. But when it comes to the Packers and in the NFL, I am the biggest homer and just like fire the coach and just like we need a new quarterback. Like I'm so reactive, and it's just funny how I just the juxtaposition between the two is a little embarrassing, but I wear it and I own it. So
I'm glad you own it. Obviously, a Brewers fan growing up. Who were you guys growing up?
Grew up idolizing Robin Yount, Paul Molitor, I mean, Jim Gantner, and so that group of players playing for the Brewers. But it was also guys like Jeff Cirillo, who I ended up
Oh,
playing
okay.
with. Yeah, so I grew up in my in kind of my grade school years watching, Molitor and Yount, and then once I got into high school and in middle school and high school, it was like the next group of guys like the Jeremy Bernitzes and
Oh.
Jeff Cirillos. And even Richie Sexton a little bit more into college years and stuff. So I was a diehard all the way through, and I know all the players, and I loved following the crew.
After high school, you play for the Eagles of Wisconsin and lacrosse. Am I saying that correctly?
That's correct, yeah.
No affiliation with the Badgers because I'm a Kentucky basketball fan, so I'm still harbor a lot of resentment to Wisconsin basketball, so I'm not a fan of those guys.
No, I understand. No affiliation. It's so the WIAC, or the WIAC, some people call it the WIAC, is the Wisconsin Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, and it's all Division III sports. And so I actually was undersized coming out of high school, and lacrosse was one of the only schools to offer me kind of a spot on the team. And that's why I played Division III baseball and ended up getting signed out of Wisconsin lacrosse.
I read a while ago that Wisconsin, I think when you played, you guys had a lot of guys that made it to the pros from that league. Didn't you guys have a lot of Division III players that went to the show?
Yeah, so my freshman year, UW Oshkosh got five guys drafted off of that team, which is incredible because a lot of Division One, major Division One programs don't even get five guys
Yeah, I just had on a
drafted.
dude from the University of Florida. They went to the College World Series. They had two guys who made it to the
Yeah.
show. So,
Well, yeah, so made it to the show or get drafted.
well,
There's a
drafted was only four guys.
four guys. Okay, yeah. So this team had five players drafted, and then other guys like Jordan Zimmerman played at UW Stevens Point, and I mean, obviously he was a star in the big leagues for a number of years. And Jim Gantner went to UW Oshkosh, and that was previously. There's Jared Washburn. He went to Oshkosh, and he pitched in the big leagues
Legit
for over
players,
10
yeah.
years. Yeah, Bob Wickman, UW Whitewater. So there's guys that for sure come out of the WEAC and all over Division III baseball. Now I think that's probably going to happen more often, just because with all the data and the analytics that go into the game, and so players are being seen and noticed a little bit more. So, D3 baseball is very good, high level baseball.
Now you can go 5 years from now and look at mock drafts. When you were playing Division III, were there many mock drafts? And were you disappointed not getting drafted? Did you think you were going to get drafted? Because you had some heavy years. You batted over 400, a lot of home runs. You thought you were going to get drafted?
Yeah, I did. In fact, a couple of scouts told me they were going to take me on draft day. Draft day came and went, and I didn't get picked. So I ended up going to pharmacy school. That was my backup plan
Oh,
at
wow.
UW Madison. Yeah, so at that was a Badger for one semester, and then I quit to attend a tryout as an open tryout, basically for the Brewers down in Arizona, and had a good showing. And I begged the scout to sign me. So it was Rick Wilson. He was the West Coast cross checker at the time. I think he's still with the Anaheim Angels at this point in their scouting department. But yeah, I begged him. I said, "Hey, give me a shot, and I said I deserve a chance, all these other guys." Because I
Wow.
was kind of competing in that tryout with other guys that had already gotten their shot and gotten released by teams, and they were playing independent ball at the time. So he said, "You know what?" He said, "You do deserve a shot." So I got a shot, and I almost got released that first spring training, and I stuck around and kind of worked myself into a prospect, and was the minor league player of the year for the Brewers
Yes.
that first year, that first full season in Beloit. I was older than everybody, but I still had a monster year, and then I kind of worked my way up, and I got called up in 2006, 3 years after I got signed. So it's kind of a fairy tale story, really. It didn't end like a fairy tale because I didn't have a lot of success at the major league level. But I played 14 seasons. I loved every
You got to
single
play in
minute of
Asia,
it.
which was awesome.
Played in Asia, played in Japan, played in Korea. And then after I got done playing, I scouted. I was a scout for 4 years for the Rangers, and I absolutely loved that. I have three little girls at home, so I had to actually transition away from that. It was just too much travel. And so, but so I got a regular sales job, and then Brian Anderson, the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers,
Yeah, of
the
course.
national broadcaster, probably the best in all of sports. Brian is just incredible and an incredible talent. His brother, I was a colleague of with the Rangers. So Mike
Okay.
Anderson is a scout with the
While you were
Rangers.
scouting, okay.
Yeah, so he and I got to be good friends. And then after I left, Mike said, "Hey, Brian, my brother thinks you'd be pretty good at the broadcast thing." So I'm like, "No shot. No way am I going to be good at that." So anyway, long story short, 3 years later, I'm doing color, 40 games of color this year, and I loved every single minute of it. Was doing the pre and post game show, loved every single minute of that. So it is a fairy tale in terms of just living out my dream, and it's been the game. I just love the game so much, and it's been so good to me. I know that's cliche, but I don't take it for granted. I love it. And so that's kind of how it's all played out.
I want to talk about your playing days and stuff, but going back now to broadcasting, calling games, best stadium to call a game from, best away stadium to call a game from.
The best away stadium. Let me think about that, because I've only been to a handful of them so far, right? And I don't want to get this wrong, because it's not somebody. It's not like Pittsburgh, because that's so far up, right? And you're so like it's
But
hard to
it's
see
the
the
best
actual
view. It's gorgeous. You see
great
the
view.
Clemente Bridge.
It's a great view, the Andy Warhol Bridge, and I always forget the name of the third bridge here. But then it's the and then. Washington, same idea. You're above the lights, so it's like too far. But again, a beautiful stadium, nice backdrop. I've been to St. Louis. That was great. It's a great view, and it's a great venue to call a game. New York, I mean, how can you not love the Yankees, right?
Yeah.
And the Yankee Stadium. So that was great. Citi Field was great. Man, I got to think about that. I don't think there's one that really stands out. Maybe that answers the question. There's not really one that's just like, oh my goodness, this is the best place to call a game. Maybe just Yankee Stadium, because how cool is that? I got a chance to call three games at Yankee Stadium. So I'll go with that as a default.
And I'm going to jump all over the place, though, but I went on your Instagram. My wife has it. I don't have Instagram. And I saw you had pictures with Mantle, like the Mantle plaque, the Mantle jersey. What is it about guys our age or a little older and their pops? Like, my dad legit thought Mickey Mantle can walk on water. Well, Dad, no. Mantle, I know your dad loved him. What is it about Mantle that our father's just obsessed over?
Well, so my dad actually grew up in the Bronx.
He
grew up in the Bronx, and his dad was a brilliant research physician and did his research on Hodgkin's disease. And he did his work at St. Vincent's Hospital. That's what I was named after. I was named after St. Vincent Hospital where my grandfather did his work. But anyway, so Mickey Mantle's dad, I believe, and uncle both died of Hodgkin's because they worked in the coal mines in Oklahoma. And so he donated to my grandfather's research. Really cool story and cool connection. We have pictures of Mickey Mantle shaking my grandfather's hand.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, super cool. So that is a very tight connection there that my dad had.
Oh, yeah.
Mickey Mantle. But you're right, though. So even back home in Racine, my coach, Jack Schiestel, growing up, he loved Mickey Mantle. He still loves the Yankees to this day, and Mantle's his favorite player. I think at the time, you know, he was such an iconic player, an iconic personality as well. I mean, you're talking about a five-tool talent, and they just don't come around that often. So when you see someone like that's bigger than the game almost, it's like a Michael Jordan type of a player. I think that's why people loved him so much. He was so beloved, and he was great, right, with the media. And so, like I said, such a personality. So I think that was and the game did a great job. And I wasn't around back then, obviously. We weren't around back then. But I think the game did a great job of marketing him and just kind of selling him as the face of the game. And so I think that they did a great job of that.
In the booth, what's one thing you didn't realize, like, holy crap, I got to do this in the booth, that really, like, okay, this kind of surprised me?
I mean, Mike, I got to be honest, just talking about the game and like sounding like I know what I'm doing. That was it. 100%. The first game that I did, well, the first pre and post game shows that I did, I was like, get me off of this set right now. It was so nerve wracking, more nerve wracking than playing in a major league game.
Wow.
Because that light goes on and, you know, I've done interviews and I've been fine doing that. But like, when that light goes on, like, you start to realize, like, there are thousands of people watching you and like, kind of like want to know, you know, what you're going to say and whether or not you're going to fumble this up. And you get over that, obviously. So when I got in the booth for the first time, those anxieties kind of come up again, just because it's a new experience.
Yeah.
You get used to the pre and post game show. And then once you get in the booth, like, that's a whole new experience you got to kind of overcome. But the more reps you do, the more podcasting you do, like this stuff, the more comfortable that you do get, the more you realize, like, okay, I have something to say. I want to get it out and start thinking of it more like a conversation. So just honestly, just to answer your question specifically, it's just the experience of being in the booth and talking about the game and just trying to sound like an analyst. So that's it. Yeah.
What kind of research do you do? You're coming through the Yankee Stadium. Listen, we know Judge, Lemieux, Mayhew, Giancarlo Stanton. You played with these guys. You played with a few of them. What research are you doing? Are you making little notes, getting ready to tell a story? You don't want to repeat the story over and over, but you might have a Stanton story. Do you make a lot of notes?
Yes. Yes, I do. So at first you thought I was nuts, the amount of notes that I had. I was overprepared, like totally overprepared, but that helped me feel a little bit more comfortable in my first games. This year, I went through every player on the opposing team's roster, and I knew the Brewers like the back of my hand, most of those guys. If I needed to brush up on kind of like their recent numbers or any kind of recent trends that were happening with their specific games, whether or not they're hitting lefties or righties or, you know, whatever. I would get dope on dope. Dope is a scouting term. So I would get information on players. And so that's another good point. My scouting background did really help and it has helped. It continues to help just digging in on players, finding little nuanced things about their games, finding nuanced things kind of about their personal lives, if it's pertinent. And so I would just go through every single player and try and get some information on them that might be interesting to tell that story like you're talking about. And once you have that, it's kind of at the, you don't want to be scripted in any way. And so you just kind of have it. And then what happens, which is really interesting, is what happens is once you do your research and you study these guys, then when you're in the moment and you're having a conversation with a Brian Anderson or a Jeff Levering, then it just comes to you, to be honest, the more you trust what you're doing. Right. So it's kind of, you've done podcasting at this point. It sounds like you're really well prepared. I would imagine you do some prep work, but you're probably trusting your knowledge at this point. And so it's kind of just coming out like a conversation. So anyway, that is kind of how you do it. And like I said, the trust factor is huge in this business.
Well, even though I wanted to start minor leagues up to now, we'll go backwards because you mentioned scouting. While scouting with the Rangers, one guy you hit on, like, okay, you're like, this is my guy. Not everyone was high on him. Is there a guy, or can you lie and say that you nailed a guy?
Yeah, no, I do. I joke around with my former colleagues quite a bit with the Texas Rangers with like a little like a thread, like a text thread. Like I tell them I was the greatest scout that's ever scouted because it doesn't matter anymore. I'm not a scout, so it's great. So anyway, but Lance Lynn was a guy that I really nailed him. So he was with the St. Louis Cardinals before he signed with the Texas Rangers. That was in 2000, I believe 17 with the Cardinals. And I recommended that we sign him as a free agent. Now, I think there were some other guys that did like him as well, but in the meeting, in our pro scouting meetings at the end of the year, there was some pushback on whether or not some guys in the room thought he would be any good. So, and he was only like 88 to 92 with the Cardinals, but he could really pitch. And I just loved his demeanor on the mound. So we signed him to a 3-year, $10 million deal or a 30 mil, 10 million a year, 3 years, yeah. 30 million. And which is my goodness, what a bargain nowadays for to sign a guy like that. And he was up for the Cy Young Award like 3 years in a row. I mean, he was outstanding with the Rangers and he bumped up his velocity as well. So he kind of took well to all the new data and the analytics and the pitch lab that we put him through. But yeah, so I was really high on him. I'll brag and say that I nailed him.
You know, this on the smallest scale of all time, it's like when you fantasy baseball, if you draft a guy and they become your guy and they help you win. So is Lance Lynn like your guy now? Like you have a spot for him, right?
Oh, I do. Yes, for sure. In fact, I hope the Brewers sign him this coming year. So, yeah, I liked him a lot.
We'll keep rewinding. Your time in Korea. I love players who played internationally. That's how much you love the game. We'll do Korea and Japan together. The biggest difference between those two countries with Asian players and baseball here in the States, biggest difference you holy crap, that's culture shock over there.
Between the two countries or between
America and Asia?
American baseball and Asian baseball. So actually, I'll actually separate the two countries because I love playing in both. Mm-hmm. I love the experience. I love the experiencing the different culture. I love experiencing the different culture in the game, which was alarmingly different. So going from the United States playing baseball here and then to Japan, that was the biggest culture shock in terms of the baseball side of things. I knew the culture was going to be different, the food, you know, but they put you up in like this great hotel, like apartment. They treated you like a king, quite frankly. I mean, whatever you needed, they would kind of take care of it. And so that side of things was kind of easy. And I enjoyed that side of things and just the differences in the everyday life culture. But the baseball in Japan, if you hit four rockets right at the shortstop and you went 0-for-4, okay, they You might have got, I mean, they thought, it felt like that they thought that you insulted their family members, right? They treated you like you were the worst human on planet Earth, like going 0-for-4. Like, it's just their very result-oriented culture, mm-hmm. and in baseball specifically. And I think overall in the culture as well. So then, but if you got a 14 hopper that went through the infield, you got jammed, you broke your bat, and it was a 2 RBI single. Oh, nice batting, nice batting. No. Like, they thought you were the best player ever, which, again, like, just different. But, you know, that's just, there's something to be said about that, actually. Like, mm-hmm. get hits.
Yeah.
Produce, win.
Any way you can. No one cares about the exit velo and how hard it was hit. Get your exactly. base hit. Wow.
Exactly. So I did appreciate that. And it was a shock at first, because like your hitting coaches and your managers in the States, like, they will put you back in the line. If you're hitting rockets all over the place, they know that those are going to fall.
Yeah.
And
they're going to find the hole. Yeah.
You're going to continue to get yourself in the lineup, but you might get sent down if you go 0-for-2 games with 8 rockets. So just different. And then Korea was not as much like that. It was a little bit more westernized, just in general. I was in Seoul, and so they have an army base there. Yeah, so there was a lot of like American restaurants, just a little bit more of an American or westernized culture over there. But also different, and also just a great experience. I had a great team with great teammates. I was on the same team as Gong, I think. We call him Kang Jung. I think it was Jung Ho Kang. Anyway, so he played for the Pirates,
mm-hmm.
and then we have Byung Ho Kim, who actually signed with the Minnesota Twins, and he didn't have success over here, but he went back. So just really talented group of players, and just great teammates as well. So it was a great experience, both of them.
And didn't you play with Kaigawa? Wasn't he on your team in Japan? Oh no,
I did. That's right. I forgot about that. So he was at the end of his career. He wasn't throwing very hard. Mm-hmm. He was hurt a lot, but I forgot I played with him. Yes.
And I don't know if you did. Did you play against Tanaka? Oh, probably not, right? Was that the same time as you? I'm trying to think if Tanaka was there when.
No, but I did play against Tanaka. I got to remember that. Maybe I did. Was he at the end of his career as well? Because he played for Rakuten.
Yeah, the Golden Monkeys, I think.
Eagles.
Yes.
And so, but, you know, I did play against Shohei Ohtani. I faced Shohei Ohtani. So wow. He was 18 years old. He was throwing 100 miles an hour. And I hit a rocket right at the second baseman for an out. And then he punched me out. And I just got the 2 at-bats against him. But, yeah, I faced Shohei when he was
18. Wow, that's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was as talented then. I mean, he's raw.
Yeah.
He's a little bit more raw, but I mean, it was 100, and he had a nasty split finger. And I think he swung the bat really well that year as well. So yeah, 18 years old, pretty impressive.
You played in my backyard. I'm a Yankee fan. I got 2 seats from Yankee Stadium right next to me. But you played for the Mets, homered for the Mets. When you played for the Mets, where'd you live in New York?
So I was called up from Buffalo, mm-hmm. and I just stayed at the team hotel, wherever they put us up at, which was just down the street from the stadium. It was walking distance in Queens. There was a Holiday Inn Express. So, yeah, that's where I stayed. And Omar Quintanilla, he joined our team. And so I was roommates with him at the team hotel for however long we stayed up there. I wasn't going to get an apartment because I knew it was going to – that was a little pricey. And so, you know, I was going to be up and down. I figured that. So I stayed in the hotel.
Not saying that you ever partied hard, but did you guys go out a lot after the games?
A couple of times with, like, you know, some of the guys from the team, Justin Turner and, mm-hmm. and Ike Davis. But I actually didn't. I didn't partake in a lot of that nightlife stuff, just in general as a player.
You went yard. Was it your first home run was for the Mets, right?
First home run, yeah.
Clayton do you have Richard. The ball?
I do somewhere. It's got to be. Honestly, it's. I do have the ball. Yeah. So Clayton Richard, and then a couple of days later, Cole Hamels. Yeah, I could hit left-handed pitching. I could not hit the right-handed slider. Yeah.
I have a ton of athletes on, and I love draft day stories. Obviously, famously, the movie story of an underdog story. That's what you are. You weren't drafted. Give me the call up to the show. You're jumping around the minor leagues. I believe Nashville Sound.
Nashville.
You get the call. How does that call happen? They bring you downstairs. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so it was after a game. I was in Albuquerque, and it was September, or actually August. How many days are there in August? 31, whatever, 31. Last day of August. last day of August, and we all knew, you know, players were going to get called up to the expanded rosters for the expanded rosters in September. Back then, it wasn't just two guys. Now they're the roster limits for how many guys mm-hmm. call up in September, which is two now. Back before, what, 3 years ago, whenever they changed that rule, it was 40. You could call up all 40 guys. And so everyone in AAA, that's kind of their you know, their holy grail at the end of the mm-hmm. season, at the end of the AAA season, like, we have a chance to get called up in September. I was a catcher, so they always need that extra third catcher. And so manager calls me in, and I could play other positions. I could play third, first, outfield. So I knew, like, I had a real good shot at it. I was swinging a really hot bat. There was rumblings whether or not I was going to get protected on the 40-man just because, you know, I was 26 at the time. Mm-hmm. So it was a good shot that I was going to need to get protected anyway on the 40-man. So calls me and he says, hey, the team, it was Frank Kremblis, the manager of National Side. Hey, we're all going to head back. We got a bus tomorrow at like 4 a.m., some ridiculous time in AAA. The buses were always at like 4 a.m. to get back home or get to a different city. And so he's like, we're all going to be there at 4 a.m. Make sure, but you're not going to be on that bus. You're going to go to the big leagues tomorrow. So that's how it happened. So I was like, this is awesome. So get called up. I was the hometown kid, grew mm-hmm. up just 20 minutes south of there. And God. So it was like a playoff. I mean, it wasn't a playoff? The Brewers were still kind of in it. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we were still in it. And it was a one-run ball game. And again, like I said, I was swinging a hot bat. And I had all my family and friends there. I had my friends from high school and college.
That's wild.
T-shirts that spelled my name, like V-I-N-N-Y, like out in the bleachers. And I get the last at-bat of the game. Ned Yost was the manager. He said, hey, look, if Cirillo, the guy that I grew up watching, if he gets on base, then you're going to go ahead and pinch hit for – it was Brady Clark. And because he had not been swinging a good bat. So I'm like, all right. So sure enough, he gets on base, and then I get an at-bat. I thought I was swinging such a hot bat in AAA. I was like, I'm going to get this done. I'm going to get a double. I'm going to tie the game. And so – I punched out. I thought I was going to get the job done. I was like, and Joe Borowski was on the mound. He was a closer for the Marlins. He threw a slider just off the plate. It was like an inch off, and it was called strike three. So yeah, and the pitch before, I swung at it in the dirt. And so I'm like, I read the next one. I was like, okay, that's a slider. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take that pitch. And it stayed up a little bit and strike three. So
you were a little older, minor league player of the year. People knew who you are. When you go in the locker room the first time, are you going around to Ben Sheets, Ricky Weeks, Prince Fielder, introducing yourself, or you just go to your thing and sit down?
I mean, I was already in spring training with all those guys.
Okay, so they knew you.
Yeah, they knew. Yeah, and so they were all like, hey, congrats and stuff like that. But like, it's different from spring training to the regular season, especially when the team is kind of turning things around and really like just a bunch of years in a row. It was just abysmal play by the Brewers. And then finally, all those guys you mentioned were starting to turn things around. Corey Hart, JJ Hardy. And those are that was the young core. And so like when you get there, it's those guys wanted to win really bad. So it was a little bit more of a intense atmosphere in that clubhouse. And then obviously add the third deck, add the bright lights, add the 30,000 screaming fans. It's like, it's an experience. I'll never forget it.
You're still a rookie going up there. Any rookie hazing with the Bills or anything? Any good rookie hazing stories? And not really, because you guys kind of a pennant race thing.
Well, you know, so they had all the rookies dress up like, you know, in costumes and stuff. So I was a Hooters girl. Yeah, so it was in Wrigley, so they had us walk around the whole stadium and then get on the bus. Walk around the block.
You mentioned minor league, the 4 a.m. I know the minor leagues can be tough. What was the best or worst promotion you saw as a player? Like, oh my God, are we really playing when they're doing this? Maybe Helena, wherever you are, was it any weird ones?
There's no weird ones that I remember. I do remember in the Pioneer League though, there was like forest fires and we couldn't and like we had to delay the game because it was so like smoky. And
What?
then yeah, it was so you couldn't really see the baseball. It was like fog, like covering the whole field. So we had to actually delay that. In Helena, the sun would set right over center field. So like for like the first two at bats, maybe you were hoping that like it was a long first inning, even if you were in the field, like just so
Yeah.
that the sun would go down so you could actually see the ball. Otherwise, the minor league promotions were awesome.
Yeah.
Myron Noodleman, he passed away unfortunately recently. He was the best. I don't know if anyone's seen Myron Noodleman. You go to YouTube and check out his act. It's hilarious, absolutely hilarious. The superstars, those guys were all around the minor league. So I enjoyed my time. I even enjoyed the bus rides, like
Wow.
the 12-hour bus rides sometimes. Like those were there's just looking back, like you wouldn't change it. So it was awesome.
Were you on the 08 team when the CC Sabathia, when you guys made that run, when that was every night he was just throwing six, seven innings? How fun was that watching that, just observing him going out there?
Yeah, awesome. I mean, it was probably in person the most impressive thing I've seen on a baseball field, just like in person scene. The ability to go on short rest every single start, basically by the time from the time he was acquired
Yeah.
all the way through. It was and then he was becoming a free agent as well. So nowadays you hear guys like, I need to be taken, you know, you
Yes.
saw that sound bite. That Mariners pitcher,
Yeah.
you know, I want to be taken out. Like, and then Sabathia was just, he wanted the ball. He wanted to help the team win. And he talks about his time with the Brewers as one of his best memories as a baseball player.
Wow.
So just, there's something in the water here in Milwaukee, just in terms of like how much the fans rally behind you and how, you know, it's a little bit easier media market, so it's just I think it's easier to develop the team chemistry around here. So I think that's why he kind of speaks to that as well.
I remember that 08 thing because he was going to be a free agent. I'm a Yankee fan. The rumor was he was coming to the Yankees. I'm like, why is this guy pitching on short? I hated it.
Yeah,
You guys
yeah.
were using him so much. I'm just thinking, did you play with Matt LaPorta?
Yeah, I did.
He
Yeah.
was just on last week because I remember we were talking
Wow.
about him getting traded for CeCe, so that's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually played with Matt LaPorta when after I got DFA'd by the Mets, the Indians at the time claimed me because I played with Matt in Columbus also. So when he was still with the Indians. So
You guys in Milwaukee had such a good, we named all the guys, Sheets, Hardy, Prince. What a Chris Capuano. You guys had such a young, potentially be a great core of players. You guys made the playoffs and everything, but that was a great job. Whoever did the scouting job back then, you guys were a hot young phenoms coming up.
yeah, that was Jack Zarenzik. He was the
Oof.
scouting director at the time, and he ended up becoming the GM of the Seattle Mariners a few years later. But he did a great job. It was Tom Allison, Jack Zarenzik. I'm missing some names here. Perry Minajian's brother. Oh my gosh, I am Zach. I'm embarrassed that I didn't remember that right away. So Zach Minajian was part of the scouting department. Tom Flanagan. So all these guys were just phenomenal at finding talent. I mean, and Doug Melvin and Gord Ash and O'Brien, Dan O'Brien, though that through the group of those three guys at the
Yeah.
top of the organization were very good at trusting their scouts, and they just did a great job. Yeah, to take Prince fifth overall. If you read the book Moneyball, they
Yeah.
kind of disparage Prince in that pick,
Yeah.
and then he turns out to be one of the best. If he didn't get hurt, Prince would be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. He was the best player I ever seen play. I mean, he played so hard,
Really?
50 home runs. He was not well liked by the media. He was quieter in front of the media, but in the clubhouse, the funniest guy you've ever seen in your life or heard. And then not only that, but he wanted to win so bad. It was so impressive, the competitor that
Wow.
he was. Yeah. 50 home runs, but he was a pure hitter too. And he would ground out to the pitcher and run as fast as he could to first base. Like, you do not see that anymore. He was just loved watching him play, and guys rallied around him. But yeah, to pick him fifth, And then to pick, J.J. Hardy was a second rounder. Corey Hart was an 11th rounder. Jonathan Lucroy was part of that. But that was a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just did a phenomenal job.
After that, you finally play in warm weather. You go down to Miami. And another young group, Giancarlo, Hanley Ramirez. Yeah. Was Jose Fernandez, or that was a little after you?
I was with the Marlins for two stints.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was a little bit after. I was in spring training with Yelich though as well. So I played with Giancarlo Stanton when he was Mike Stanton. So he changed his name, yeah, to Giancarlo. And he had 20 home runs in the first 2 months of the season in Double A, and he was 20, and that was like such an incredible talent that he was. I mean, and that was one of the biggest ballparks in the entire mm-hmm. Southern League in Jacksonville. So you could tell that he was special. Unfortunately, he's getting hurt a lot now, yeah. Right? So, but he's still got that in him. That was very, very incredible talent. So, who else was with the Marlins at the time? But Jose was a little bit after me when I got called up.
How difficult is it? And I ask this to a lot of players. You're Milwaukee, LA, Miami, New York, Cleveland. Is it difficult bouncing around like that?
It comes with the territory. You kind of expect it, right? Okay. So unless you're an established guy, it's very difficult to be established. I mean, you have to be talented. You have to catch breaks, and then you have to perform when those bright lights go on, and you have to perform for a long period of time. I mean, you see a lot of guys perform at the big league level for like a year, and then all of a sudden, like they kind of struggle. They scuffle. Yeah. The league kind of figures them out, or they're not getting the breaks, and so that weighs on their confidence. And then all of a sudden, you'll see guys like that just kind of never find it again, kind of lose it. And so they're just bouncing around to teams. And so it's kind of expected unless you are established, like I said, and have had continued success mm-hmm. kind of year after year. You don't really know where you're going to be at. I mean, you will take any job that you can get. You'll get released. You'll get designated for assignment, and you're ready to just kind of jump around. And I was lucky enough, I didn't get married until pretty much after I was done playing. And a lot of guys have to do what I'm just talking yeah. about with families and with young children. It's really difficult on a lot of guys, but they figure it out.
After you left Milwaukee, you played for Italy. How'd that, like, I know you weren't drafted, obviously, but Italy. How'd that come about? Did they ask guys, hey, who has Italian heritage, who wants to come play for Piazza? How'd that happen? Because that was super cool.
Yeah, so that was the World Baseball Classic. And I played for Team Italy. I didn't go to Italy to play, yeah. but that was in the World Baseball Classic in 2009. And I was told how they accumulated the names for potential roster spots for that team is they looked at the 40-man roster of each – of all the 30 clubs, they looked for guys that had a vowel at the end of their name, like an Italian sounding name. So Mike, you would have been perfect. Like they would have called you if you were on a 40 man. So that's how that happened. And so anyway, but one of the guys that helps with that Italian team is Dan Bonanno. And Dan coincidentally grew up and lived in Racine, Wisconsin for a number of years. Yes. Crazy coincidence. So there's the Bonanno brothers in Racine, and one of them lives in Italy and helps with the Italian and helps. With, I think he helps with the World Baseball Class, the whole thing, but he helps with Team Italy. He kind of assists in a lot of the actually, I think he works for Major League Baseball now mm-hmm. over in Europe to kind of grow the game. But anyway, so well, kind of a small world thing.
How many times, and it's going to be a generic kind of cliche question, kid from Racine, not drafted, D3, you played professionally for almost 20 years, then you scout for the Rangers, now you're in the booth, are you like pinching yourself like, are you like, look at my life, like it's sick.
No, it is, it really is, and you know, so it's still not like, so as a player, you're always, again, just kind of like wondering what's tomorrow going to bring, because you're kind of fighting for your life, right?
You're always on edge, right?
You are a little bit, and there's not a whole lot of security in what you're doing. So like you're kind of secure if you go 3 for 4 the other, yesterday, right? But if you go 0 for 4 today, you're just kind of like wondering, oh man, is this it? And so yes, I mean, I loved every minute of feeling that because it's like it pushes you, it makes you like want to continue to be the best version of yourself as a player and as a person as you can be. And so now it's kind of it's kind of the same thing. I mean, you're in the booth and you're kind of like,
Wow.
I'm sure being judged by what you're saying. I mean, I know I do. I listen to guys give commentary and do analysis of football games and stuff. It's like some guys I like, some guys I don't, but I'm sure that's happening now. It's a little bit different because like if you have a bad game, I guess, I think it's not as reactionary probably how they make decisions on that. So anyway, I've enjoyed every single minute of every single day that I've been able to be in the game of baseball, whether it's playing, scouting, or now broadcasting. And so I just don't take it for granted. I think I love it so much and I'm so passionate about it. And I love digging in on the game and understanding more about the game and studying about players. I just because of the fact that I love it so much and passionate and don't take it for granted, I think I'll always, regardless of where I'm at and my standing in the game, I think I'll always just feel like I've won. Like I'm a winner in the game, and just being part of it. That's the feeling that I get. And it's a great feeling to have, Mike.
Before we finish up with the quick hit questions, are you a big Seinfeld fan? Because again, on your Instagram, you went to Tom's Monk's Diner on 112th Street in New York. You had to go visit it?
Oh, I had to go visit it. Brett Reelen, the producer of the games, was he actually suggested, he's like, I'm going to Tom's, you want to go? I'm like, for sure. So we took an Uber. It looks nothing like the
Nothing.
diner inside, but I had an omelet and it was great. And so it was worth the visit just to get the picture on Instagram, to be honest.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Brewers in the playoffs. How's the atmosphere there? I know they're probably down with the Packers. They're high because Dame Lillard's come to the Bucks, so it's kind of
Yeah.
people pumped up about it. The city, like they're buzzing.
It's a great sports state, not just city. It's a great sports state. I mean, people are passionate about the Badgers, obviously, the basketball, football teams, the Packers. People go nuts over the Packers. But the Brewers, well, of course, and the Bucks. And the Bucks are really a great team right now, especially with Giannis. But the Brewers, like, I would put the fans on almost the same level as they are with the Packers and how passionate they are with the Packers because when the team wins like this, because it's a party in the parking lot, there's tailgating, it's the fans just love their sports teams, and the Brewers have been really good for the past, my goodness, since 2017 they finished second and almost made it to the playoffs, and that was kind of during a rebuild that everyone didn't think they were going to be able to rebuild that quickly, and then they did. Then they acquired Yelich, and then ever since in 18, this team has been really good. The team, just this year more than any of the other years, the team has a real chance to win it all. I mean, they really do, just because of their starting pitching. Their bullpen's really good. You got the best closer in the game right now, probably Devin Williams. So, and then the lineup is really deep, really, really deep lineup. So they do have a shot now. It's just, it can be a coin flip, it seems at times, with are you going to catch a break in a game? Is going to ball going to bounce this way or that? So I think that there's a lot of buzz around this team right now. If they can get past this first round, then play the Dodgers in LA, or LA would have home field, but you never know what can happen. I mean, it's a fun team to follow, and Craig Counsell, he's the best manager in the game. I mean, he just is. He threads that needle between holding guys accountable to perform, but then also keeping it real loose, like because he played for so long. He won 2 World Series rings as well, so kind of knows how to thread that needle. There's not many that can do that. Maybe Terry Francona was the other guy that could do that as well. So he's the best manager of baseball. Everyone, and he's a Wisconsin kid, grew up around the team in Whitefish Bay, just north of the city. So everyone loves Counts, and it's a special team, and it's really a special feeling around this team. It's a lot of fun.
I'm going to make you laugh right now. My mom lives down the Jersey Shore. I'm driving home tonight, and I have on sports radio, back-to-back callers, a Met fan, Yankee fan. They're both like, he's not signed for next year. He's coming to the Bronx. The Yankees still have a manager, but, you know, Buck isn't come back to the Mets. So he's wanted here in New York, by the way. I just want to let you know, both fan bases want him bad. Just so you guys know, I'm sure you do know, though.
It's going to be interesting to see that whole thing play out in the offseason. We'll see what happens.
All right, ready to finish up with some quick hit questions.
Yeah.
You come to New York City. You're going to call a game at Yankee Stadium. You and I are at a bar in the city. Who's the coolest person in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back? You want to impress everyone at the bar. Who are you texting?
Oh, my gosh. That's not a quick hit question. Taking some thought. Brian Anderson.
That's a good answer. A lot of people know him. Okay. One sporting event in history you wish you could have witnessed live. Front row seat to any sporting event in the history of sports.
Tyson getting beat by Buster Douglas.
That's a unique answer. I like that one.
Yeah. That's great.
You have a lot of jerseys behind you. Coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
Shoot. I don't collect a lot. What is the coolest thing? Maybe this Bob Uecker bobblehead right here. I don't collect a lot. Yeah.
That's a great – you get to meet Harry Doyle and Bob. That must be the coolest thing, meeting Bob Uecker, right?
Yeah. Oh, he's the best. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Absolute legend. 2 a.m. go-to food. 2 a.m. You're in a hotel by yourself. You can have any food you want. What are you eating?
Taco Bell. Love it.
Favorite show to binge watch?
Seinfeld.
Okay. And finally, I know you're not a memorabilia guy. Last person you asked for an autograph or a photo from?
I took a photo with Keith Hernandez at Citi Field.
Another guy from Seinfeld. That's a real good answer.
Yeah. I was debating whether or not to get Keith to do like one of these little stupid social media like skits that I've been doing. And I was like, I'm not going to. Okay, it was going to be something to do with Seinfeld. And I didn't want to put him on the spot. Like, I'm not driving him to the airport, like something like that. Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, this was an absolute blast. Thank you for doing this. I know it's late. Both of our places, Sunday night. Dude, I really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah,
I had
anytime.
A blast.
Yeah, anytime, Mike. Anytime you want me back on. Thanks.
Good luck with the Brewers, bro.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Chat soon, my friend. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.